Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robin Hood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Thanks, Marshall. Everybody around the world, certainly here in the United States, theaters are dark everywhere. But at the national level, at the regional level, at the community level, all theaters are trying to revive a theatrical season. And here in the greater Berkshires and the Hudson Valley, one of my favorite theaters, the Ankrum Opera House, which has, I think, the most innovative program in seasons past of performance art and concerts and live theatrical productions, in addition to readings and all the rest, has a summer lab series. And there are three playwrights that we're going to talk to this morning about what they've written that is being streamed live this coming weekend on AnkrumOperaHouse.org. The three playwrights are Frank Boyd. Hi, Frank.
Hey.
And Mariah Askew. Hi, Maria. And Heather Christian. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Thanks you all for joining me. Frank, let's start with you, because actually I've got to tell you, your Holler sessions that you did, I think back, was it 4 years ago now?
Summer 2017.
Yeah, at the Ankrum Opera House, was my introduction to it. Some good friends of mine, whom you may know, Elliot Osborne and Louise Lindemeyer, who have a musical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
They said, Dan, you've got to get over to the Ankrum Opera House and see this thing called Holler Sessions. So I went, and I loved the play. And you went on to the and performed it at the Guthrie. And that was my intro to Jeff and to Paul and what they're doing there. So thank you for that. But tell me.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Tell me about your play. Called Live from Lodge Number 274, Auction Preview. And I guess that's a working title.
Yeah, big time.
Okay.
I hope to shorten that title. The piece is, it's in its, you know, first little baby step. So talking about it is even a challenge at this point, but I'll do my best. It's staged as a preview for an online auction that's going to take place. I like to go to garage sales and estate auctions, and I've spent way too much time on eBay in my life. And it occurred to me that maybe looking at everyday artifacts from, you know, a regular kind of American life might be a way to process some of the loss and the change and just the weirdness of the current moment. So, I have this character that I created, and he's trying to get people excited about an auction for things like old golf clubs and old Polaroid photographs and, an old Vietnam War uniform. A bunch of old computer keyboards. So I think quietly, maybe the piece could serve as a kind of a eulogy for all the loss that we're all dealing with, and also not really able to deal with right now, because we're all stuck in some form of isolation, you know?
Right. Maria, your piece, is more explicitly about COVID-19, I think, than thematically the things that Frank is addressing. But tell us about it.
Yeah. First, I want to say, Dan, it's Mariah.
What did I call you?
Keep calling me Maria.
Maria, Mariah. I'm sorry. I always drop consonants.
Sorry. Mother Hope is about two characters, Buffy and Liv. Buffy is an indigenous queer woman, and Liv, the black queer woman, and they're romantically together in the middle of COVID-19. And the play is pretty much focusing on the resistance movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, and the MMIW crisis, and how do you find hope in the middle of COVID-19?
Mm-hmm. How long have you been working on the play?
I started writing the play the first 2 weeks that we were in quarantine, and I finished the first draft in the 2 weeks. And then it went up for workshops that I can get feedback on it, and then I extended it an extra 25 minutes. So now it's a 50-minute play.
And Heather, Christian, you've got a play called Practical Breviary. Did I get that right?
You did.
I guess the obvious question is, what's a breviary and what's practical about yours?
Ooh, very quick. The breviary cycle. So cloistered nuns and monks in medieval times celebrated what they called breviary cycles, or the divine canonical offices. That just meant that they got up at all hours of the night in order to celebrate a mass at every 3-hour interval during the day. This is a practice that only goes on in really secluded cloisters now in France. I think there are still a couple of sects who practice breviary cycles. But it ensures that the monks and nuns are contemplating a different aspect of being alive holistically. And well within the day. Each mass has a specific time attached to it. Each mass has a specific subject matter that is, you know, it's a Catholic adaptation, and the Catholic this ritual is so ancient that it's a little like I'm like Sherlock Holmes trying to figure out what we're really trying to talk about in the course of these masses, because the dramaturgy can be quite bonkers. So I'm adapting all 8 of these masses. They're all different kinds of theatrical exercises. The first one is a podcast. The second one is a church service. The third one is a movie. This one is a performance for an audience of one. And this is a first draft of the fourth mass, which is about isolation and abandonment by the divine.
In case you're just joining us, I'm your host, Dan Dwyer, of a program called Off Script. And I'm talking to 3 playwrights who have produced original material, original plays that are being streamed live on Ankrum Opera House .org this weekend, Frank Boyd and Mariah Askew and Heather Christian. Okay, each of you just gave a very brief summary of your play, and I'm going to react in one word to each of them and see if there's any linkages between the 3 kinds of reactions I get. Frank, you talk about your tag sale kind of story. One-word reaction is memory. Heather, you're talking about a cloistered life of literal, of liturgy and ritual, and the one-word reaction I have is routine. And Mariah, you're talking about how COVID has forced people to react, and the one-word that comes to mind when I hear about your summary is action. So what does the pandemic do with memory, routine, and action?
What does the pandemic do? I think what we do.
I mean, because all of these plays came out of the pandemic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Heather?
I feel like what the pandemic is doing is maybe shining light and illuminating these things in our lives in a different way than we've approached them before. I am certainly thinking about memory, like things that I didn't have nostalgia for before we started self-isolating. I have nostalgia for now. I have nostalgia about riding the subway in New York City. I have nostalgia for, you know, having anything on my calendar where I had to be in a place that other than my house. I feel like routine is something that has become very necessary, despite it feeling totally arbitrary. I sort of say this in the mass, but everything becomes a prayer. Like everything becomes a prayer. Everything becomes an act of action, an act of self preservation, or generosity and patience. And I think action just has a different meaning. It has a much larger and broader, more important meaning in terms of the socio-political scale that we are dealing with now and have the space to really think about and get in and change. But it also has a micro meaning in that, you know, we are having to really attack our personal lives with action, with real action, and figure out how we stay sane.
Mariah, do you think Heather has grabbed the notion of action that you talk about in your play?
Yeah, I think that the way that I connect to the three words and with my production is that I have all these memories of what protests, rallies, marches were before the pandemic. And there's this routine of going to these protests, rallies, and marches and speaking out, doing whatever we do. But then when COVID hit, it was like, well, now we can't physically go to these things. And it took George Floyd to happen for us to be like, all right, well, we're breaking all of that. And then action happened. So that's how I'm connecting the three.
Mm-hmm. And Frank, memory, because I'm recalling Holler Session. And when you described your play, you know, you're talking about how these objects bring back figments of pop culture as it relates to our personal lives. And Holler Session touched on many of those kinds of touchstones, at least in my memory of it too. So how does memory play again for you?
Yeah, I'm really interested in the human experience of being left behind by technology. So I guess that's an instance. I would add the word grief to the mix. And for this piece in particular, I feel like COVID, there's a lot to be grieving right now on personal and community and national scales. And I feel like, people don't really have the mechanisms for processing that grief that they usually have. So we're all kind of improvising our way through what to do with those feelings.
Do all three of you live in or around Manhattan or New York City? Yep. Heather, where do you live?
I live in Beacon.
Okay. And Mariah?
I live in New Jersey.
And Frank?
I live in Clintondale, New York.
Okay. Do you think, so what does environment have to do with this? Do you think you'd be writing the same kind of stuff if you lived in, I don't know, Berkeley or Colorado or Texas or?
For me specifically, I am a composer playwright. So all of my stuff is musical and I'm just on a, brass tack level, very much influenced by weather systems and just the surrounding noise of where I'm writing the thing. So on a sort of idiot level, yes.
Yeah.
But I do feel like the real estate around me has the walls have been closed, right? And I think that would be the same. Like the work that we're making now is sort of speaking from this place of having the walls close in. And I do think it would be the same if I was in Colorado. I mean, I may have coyotes instead of bird song, but.
Right. So Mariah, did you get out and protest while you were writing the piece in the last couple of months living in New Jersey, or how did you deal with it while you were writing, can I call it a call to action?
Yes, you can.
Good.
I wrote the whole play before George Floyd happened.
You're kidding.
So we weren't even protesting yet.
No.
For years I've been going to protests, rallies and marches and everything like that. But during the beginning and everything, I was not going to them because we were still in isolation.
Okay. And Frank, where did the idea for this come from in your case? The text?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to track all that down. So many things converge, and one inspiration for the piece was being at a garage sale in New Paltz a couple weeks ago, and being given a bag of golf clubs. Well, first they tried to sell them to me for $1. And I was interested, but I just wanted to look around a little more. And then they said, well, you can just have them for free. This family was just so desperate to get rid of all this stuff because somebody had passed away. And I don't know, something about that conversation, I just started looking around at all this stuff and wondered how if this was really the only kind of moment that this family would have together, this garage sale. I mean, there was only two of them there, and we were all wearing masks, and we all were 6 feet apart. And I thought, oh my God, it just occurred to me that this was all gonna go away, all this stuff. And then I didn't know if anything else would happen, if they'd have a funeral or anything. Probably not. So wanting to find a way to kind of indirectly maybe eulogize became interesting to me. And I started out with Buster Keaton, just set down as an inspiration. So I wanted the piece to have a sad clown quality. And John Prine is another inspiration, just for the tone of the piece and the humor and the underlying sadness. Those are a few things that are in the, you know, in the pot right now. But again, I'm so early in the process. I'm kind of inside of it, and it's hard to kind of step out and articulate even what it is right now. I'm kind of leaning on other people to do that for me and tell me what they're seeing, and hopefully the next, you know, path will reveal itself to me, you know, as I keep working.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Frank, I presume that your play is a solo performance by you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And Mariah, is yours a solo performance, or do you have multiple characters?
Just the two characters.
Okay. And Heather, you've got a lot of characters.
Well, theoretically, yes. Uh-huh. Theoretically, it will be performed by an orchestra and choir. But there's no character per se. Okay. It's really done in the second person.
So let me get back though to this notion that Frank said, because I know that you've presented your pieces just for the first time last weekend, and they're going to be streamed again live this coming weekend. But Frank, you mentioned you wanted to see how people react. How do you, as playwrights, measure how people react when you don't have a live audience?
That's still a question.
Yeah. I mean, so
very...
you know, how do the lines land? I mean, what's the mood of people when they enter a theater? How do you see a change of mood when they leave a theater? How do you, as playwrights, how do you get feedback in really, really primary, primitive ways?
Well, text messaging. I mean, I'm just going to speak for myself. For myself, I walked into that room and I was like, this is like doing a newscast from a space shuttle on the moon. And I don't know if anyone is watching.
Let me just interrupt and ask a naive question. When you say walk into the room, where are you streaming from?
I think Frank and I are streaming from Engram.
Okay.
And Mariah, your performers are where they are, right?
Yeah. So they're both in New Jersey right now, but we were all three in different locations.
Right. Yeah. So you walk into this room and you're walking like it's into a spaceship or something, you think,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just like it would be on a spaceship. You know, there's a minute delay. And it's, you know, there's the light is weird, and I'm in the room with, actually, Jeff and Paul are outside in the lobby doing their portion from the lobby. So I'm in an empty room with the tech crew. And that's that. And then, you know, and then it's over. And what my response to it was that's it. That happened. That was terrible. That was completely ineffective. And I looked at my husband and I was like, if I get one text message, if I get one, text message from anyone that they responded to it in any way, I'm going to say that's enough. And I got one. I got three, but like that becomes the new bar. That becomes the new bar.
And Mariah, how are you getting your feedback?
I invited a whole bunch of people, so they were texting me. They texted me after the show.
And Frank?
Same. I got one text message, but it was from Heather, so I don't know. And then Jeff forwarded me an email from one of their audience members that was actually helpful. What I kind of like about this is you can really curate who you're getting your feedback from. I mean, you can kind of avoid the awkward lobby, post-show lobby chats where sometimes people might unload a little too much on you. So I can, you know, tactfully reach out to people with very specific questions and get just what feels useful to me right now. So that's kind of nice. You know, I feel a little more protected.
In case you're joining us, the program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer, and we're talking about the Summer Lab that's happening this weekend, again, live streamed from AncrumOperaHouse.org. And we're talking to three playwrights, Heather Christian, Frank Boyd, and Mariah Askew, about the plays that they've written that are being streamed, as I said, by Ancrum Opera House. Have you gone back since you've heard your stuff presented last weekend and rewritten anything during the week? Have you toyed with it a little more? Frank, I think yours is a work in progress, or admittedly and deliberately a work in progress.
Deeply.
Is that right? Deeply a work in progress.
I have rewritten a few things. I'm painting my house, so I didn't actually sit down and write yesterday, but I thought about the piece for a long time and a few things I'm going to try. I might even try to go into the theater and work one day this week. A thing that about the COVID, you know, process that is hard for me is I don't feel very productive in my own house. So getting into a rehearsal room where there's really nothing else to do but actually work on the thing is kind of important for me. So
you still have to feel the boards under your feet physically and metaphorically.
Or just like get away from all my stuff and my yard and my lawnmower. I mean, I'll do anything to avoid actually working on something sometimes. So it's just about eliminating distractions, really.
And Mariah, what are you doing with yours?
I decided, because I was also directing my production, that I did not want to change anything until after the process, just for the sake of the consistency with the actors.
Right. And Heather?
Well, mine is mostly audio, and it's all demos. So the things that I am clocking when it's being shown are things that I would fix by arrangement. Mm-hmm. And it really came down to, do I want to make something that hits all of the beats that I know I want this piece to hit eventually when it's up, eventually when it's done, because this is a first draft? Or do I want to show something that's snappy for the sake of the reading? And I've so far have come down on the side of, I think I want to show the whole thing and keep its integrity and hit all of the beats, because otherwise it becomes a different thing for reasons that maybe don't matter so much.
There's a big emphasis among you know, the people in general about when will theater come back. And when people talk about going to the theater, a lot of them think about very conventional theater, about going to a big Broadway house or going to, you know, one of the major Berkshire theaters and seeing a musical or a play by Neil Simon or some playwright that might have heard of. You're all writing from a place that's very now, from a very... and I say this in the most positive way, non-commercial perspective. So my question is, I guess, what do you think about the theory that commercial theater, as we did know it, after the pandemic is over, or whether we get back to, you know, a vaccinated normal, that commercial theater will become more commercial? And if that's the case, do you think the kind of theater that you were doing will get more exploratory and more provocative than it otherwise might. Anyone want to take a stab at that?
I would just say that I'll speak for myself. I won't speak for everyone, but I, in the fact that I'm making theater that is not commercial, that's not because I have any sort of, I'm not trying to be subversive. I'm not trying to not be commercial. I am making the work that I feel on an intuitive level I want to see and I want to hear, and I'm craving. That my heart is craving, that my spirit is craving. This time is changing the business, sure, but it's changing us too. It's changing the way that we receive data. It's changing the way we interact with each other. It's changing what we crave as humans. That's going to change my work. That's going to change what I want to see way more than what the industry will or will not hold in terms of where people want to go in order to escape whatever life we're going to emerge into. That's what I feel.
Mariah, what cravings do you want to go deeper with?
I think that me as a writer, my goal was never Broadway. I think that Broadway is not accessible to people of color, poor people. It's only accessible to rich people that are non-POC. And I do experimental, devised, and guerrilla theater. And those types of theater are way more accessible. And I want tickets to be like $25 or less. That makes it more accessible to all people. And that's the only way I think our story should be told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frank?
My experience, I guess, has been that there's been a certain amount of freedom in knowing that the greater kind of, you know, theater industrial complex is kind of shut down. And in my mind, it's like, well, there's really no reason to write anything other than the thing that you want to put in the world. There's no other strategy really to have or in terms of getting produced or, you know, who might want something like this or that. So on one hand, it's been very lonely and I miss the collaboration. On the other hand, it's, I feel kind of like, I guess a little more freedom. I mean, I should always feel like this, but it's, yeah, it's, I've felt it more under these circumstances.
So do you think streaming theater or streaming performances or Zoom performances, however you want to talk about or characterize what you guys are doing this weekend for Ancrum Opera House, do you think that's going to become a fixture of the way we experience theater? In addition to maybe going back to live theater?
I don't think it's going to go away. Yeah. I think that what I hope is that we figure out a way to approach streaming theater or theatrical live events that we view from our computers or televisions as a different medium entirely.
Yeah.
Figure out how to work within the confines of this particular medium and be really smart about it and artful about it, which we've not really had the opportunity to investigate at this current moment.
I want to thank you all very much, and I want to wish you all very good luck with each of your current productions. And sitting on the sidelines very quietly for this program has been Jeff Musso, who's one of the directors of the Ancrum Opera House, and he's going to specify so we get it right exactly when and how people can live stream each of your plays this weekend. Jeff.
Hey there, Dan. Thank you. And I hope I get it right. So Friday night, August 14th, that's this Friday at 8 p.m., Mariah Askew's piece, Mother Hope, is playing. And we're going to attempt a post-show chat after her piece. And folks will be able to send us a note that we will then relay to Mariah, and she will then respond. So that'll all be a live discussion on Friday night after her show. On Saturday, the 15th at 8 p.m., Frank Boyd's Live from Lodge 274 auction preview is playing. streaming it also. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Heather Christian's Nun, A Practical Breviary is playing. And again, we're going to try a post-show chat after Heather's piece. These are all, you can access them through our YouTube channel. We do ask that people make reservations online at AcronOperaHouse.org so that we can get folks the link prior to each performance. And I just will say it's been really, really gratifying working with all three of these great, great, really super talented, visionary, smart folks.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Paul Ricciardi, your partner at Ancrum Opera House, for putting this together. And special thanks to the playwrights, Frank Boyd, Mariah Askew, and Heather Christian. Thanks for all joining Off Script. And for all of you out there, the most important thing, stay in touch with theater, wear a mask, and be safe. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Dwyer. This has been Off Script.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare, collectible, and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.